Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome again to another edition of Liver Unbridled here on the My View Matters Radio Network. My name is Ken Mulman. I am your host, as normal. Oh, what a week. I mean, wow. I am sunburnt, dehydrated, tired, pretty wore out. The Libertarian Party, which those of you that listen regularly know that I'm a very large activist in. We ran a booth this weekend, and I did two full days, Friday and Saturday, Friday night, and then all day Saturday. And then I had to mow the grass today, and pretty much been outside in the heat for the last, probably, since I've been inside, which is, well, for me anyway, pretty rare, considering I work in IT and I sit at a computer most of the time. The weather today, absolutely wonderful. It was kind of humid a bit around 1 or 2 o'clock this afternoon, but things cleaned up and got really nice. Boy, that was nice. And apparently, although I didn't realize it because so many other things were going on, I guess football season started this week, which is kind of wild. Seems too early for football season, but it's that time of year again, and I will I'll catch up. The teams start playing each other and playing well, and I don't really care about what team wins. I like to watch a good game now and then, so whatever. But anyway, if you'd like to call in tonight, the number here is area code 858-683-1326. Again, 858-683-1326. And if you'd like to talk, when it prompts you, you need to press number 1 on your keypad, or else, I won't know you want to talk, and you'll just sit there, just think you're one of the numerous people who tends to call in just to listen to the show by calling in. You can do also, if you're away from your computer and want to catch the show, you can use that same number to call in and listen. Just don't press 1, and it just sets you listening. All right, well, I honestly didn't see a whole lot of big differentiation of issues this week. The main thing that kind of dominated the news this week was Syria. Now, I don't want to get into Syria yet. There's a few other things, but I guess what was interesting in running the booth, as I mentioned this week or this weekend, the number of issues that are out there and the number of people that are very upset about the way things are going continues to grow. I mean, we can see this when we run outreach events with the Libertarian Party. We can kind of tell. And obviously the worse things are, or for the longer period of time that they're worse, the more people are coming our direction. And I've got numbers to back that up. I can show trends, blah, blah, blah. But all you have to do, really, is work a booth, an outreach event, and you'll see that people are getting very, very tired of the Democrats and Republicans. Now, certainly there's always the exception. And, you know, we could go through a list of a handful of exceptions. But on the whole, the Democratic and Republican parties are letting the people down. And people are getting sick of it. And they're tired of being lied to. They're tired of being told one thing and having politicians do another and try to justify it in some way. We heard a lot about Obama, actually, at this event. A lot of disgruntled Democrats at this event because of where it was located. There tend to be more Democrats in that area. And heard a lot of disappointment. A lot of people very disappointed. I guess Syria is kind of the last straw, but they were disappointed before that. And, you know, I connected with those people because, you know, I didn't vote for Obama, obviously. I voted for, Bob Barr in 2008 and Gary Johnson proudly in 2012. And, you know, when Obama won in 2008, I thought, well, you know, my guy didn't win, but at least maybe Obama will start scaling back these affronts to our liberties. Maybe we'll start getting some of our civil liberties back. Ha! No. And that, I think, is probably the most disappointing thing for anybody who's a dedicated civil libertarian, whether that's on the progressive side or the libertarian side. You know, there were a lot of people that hoped that the transgressions against our civil rights would end. And that hasn't happened. And there's been lots of promises made, and there's been lots of things said, but no action. There's been no action to back up anything that's been said to us in quite some time. And I think people are sick of it. I think more and more people are realizing that this is just a game. And whether it's Republicans that get elected or Democrats that get elected, it doesn't matter. I actually had one of the people I talked to, a Democrat, say, I was hopeful that Obama would fix things, and it turned out he was just another third term of Bush. His words, not mine. And I couldn't agree more. And it is funny, the number of people out there, the ones that actually still try to defend Bush and slam Obama, it's like, dude, don't you get it? Obama's not doing anything radically different than what Bush did. Yeah, Obama's got us involved in two Middle Eastern countries. Well, Bush did that too. Now you've got the Syria thing going, which thankfully, what's really interesting about the Syria thing, and I know I'm jumping the gun, I don't want to get into this yet, but it's really interesting to me that you have what are considered, quote, the far right and, quote, the far left, all agree that we should not be going into Syria. The support for going into Syria is from the, quote, center. It's the moderates. Now, I don't know if it's that they're not paying attention. Certainly, you know, there is the heartstring case to be made that, oh, my gosh, they're gassing people. And that's obviously not good. Chemical weapons are not good. Of course, some of the chemical weapons in the Middle East are American origin, and a bunch of them are from Russia. We made things worse by getting involved there, and so did they. But I guess the point is that there's no good that can come out of getting into Syria, and I think most people recognize that. The idea that, oh, we're just going to go in, it's going to be 3 weeks or whatever, a month, and it won't take long, no soldiers on the ground, blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, anybody who has any sort of memory remembers that that's how Iraq was sold. We're going to go in, topple Saddam. It's not going to be a big deal. It'll take about 3-4 weeks. We'll pay for it with Iraqi oil. No big deal. And none of those promises came true. We were there for much longer than a month or two. We didn't see it be paid for with Iraqi oil. It came out of our money. It added to our debt. And I think people are just kind of figuring this out, that, hey, you know what? The government lies to us all the time. And, you know, I'm one that's known that for some time. But I think some people, they really didn't realize it, or, you know, just weren't paying enough attention to see it. And as the economy continues to be bad and things just get worse, they're not getting better, they continue to get worse, it tends to start making people look around and reassessing everything and trying to decide what is it that they need to do. And I think that's why we see this spike. Libertarian Party starting in about June of last year. Yeah, June 2012. We see a spike in the number of people getting involved in the Libertarian Party. We see a spike in the number of people donating to the Libertarian Party. A spike in the number of people registering to vote as libertarians. We see an increase in activity. And that says something. I mean, it's all, for one thing, it's not even easy to register to vote as a libertarian. So that means it's, you know, got to be pretty bad for people to go out and have to research how to register as a libertarian. We're not listed on the card. You have to know how to do it. And pretty strong statement to make that you're re-registering libertarian on purpose and defying the fact that it's not even a list option on the card and managing to do it, that's a pretty big deal. And I see things continuing to get worse. And government, as government always does, just ask the question, why do you think that's a bad thing? We're oblivious to reality. What? No. What we're doing, we're benevolent, and we're doing this to protect you. Don't you see? And boy, you know, and then it turns to anger and disgust. These people, they just don't understand. We're trying to help them, and they don't want our help, and we're going to help them anyway. We're going to force our help on them. And then people, of course, back on that because they don't like being pushed around. And I think that that's where we're at now. I think we're to the point where people are kind of tired of being pushed around. And they're tired of being lied to. They're tired of hearing what our problems are. My God, everybody knows what the problems are. The economy, civil liberties, government that's spying on us, treating everyone as a suspect, government agencies out of control. Now we're talking about even more wars. No one is enthusiastic about getting into another war. This is in 2003. We had one person all weekend come up to the booth and start harassing us over our, you know, position on not going into Syria. And it was a hit and run thing, and that, you'll see those at those type of events. But he had nothing for it. He took the proper role the military was. We answered, and he was like, oh, okay, and stomped off. Whatever. Reality is, Syria is a no-win. And anybody who even looks at it for 10 seconds goes, what are we going to win there? How does killing people, if your goal is to stop killing people, how is sending other things over to kill people really accomplishing the goal? Yeah, it's different people. But at this point, it's bad guys versus bad guys. And so there's really no moral voice out there really pushing with any sort of gravitas, if you will, use that, I'll revive that term. There's no real call to stop the chemical warfare in a war between bad guy versus bad guy. After we've been lied to for over a decade about our involvement in the Middle East, every time we get involved in the Middle East, it's supposed to be quick. It's supposed to be over fast. I mean, how long has it been since mission accomplished was declared? It's interesting. We're seeing this shift. The public is tired of dealing with a government that lies to them. They're tired of a government that isn't solving problems. Obama can only blame others for failure. He does not take responsibility, nor does he provide solutions. When things are bad, all you hear about, well, you know, Republicans did that, and Bush did that, and now we're suffering the consequences of what Bush and the Republicans did. Well, okay, at some point, there's something you could have done about it. First 2 years that Obama was in office, the Democrats controlled Congress. So if you had some sort of master plan to fix everything, you had 2 full years to implement that plan. And as we've seen with Obamacare, even if the Republicans didn't like that plan, they wouldn't have had the guts to repeal it, or the votes to repeal it, or the guts to defund it. And that's the truth. So if Obama had had a plan, he could have implemented it. Instead, his focus was to get Obamacare through. And that's what we have. And Obamacare, open enrollment starts really, really soon. And you're going to see your taxes go up. You're going to see, or, so the first year the penalty is not that bad. I believe it's $95, so it's not a big deal. But what you're going to see is the cost of insurance is going to go up, despite the claims that it was going to save people money on insurance. And the administration will claim, well, it would have went up more But a trend line will disprove that. You'll be able to look and see, okay, this was the trend, and this is how much insurance was going up over time, and this is how much it went up from 2012 to 2013, or excuse me, 2013 to 2014. And that'll be easy enough to show. And then it'll have a picture attached. And with a picture, pictures, everybody understands picture. And so the problem is Republicans, apparently, plan on using Obamacare and its failure, and it will be a failure, as a campaign piece for 2014. That's apparently their big thing. And it's why they can't rally the votes to defund it, because if they vote to defund it and it falls on its face, well, then it's the Republicans' fault for defunding it. But if they just keep it chugging along and it falls on its face as designed, well, then it's the Democrats' fault. Well, here's the thing. More and more voters are sick and tired of the blame game, pointing fingers, somebody else's fault garbage. There comes a point where your lack of action also implicates you in the activity. If you see a woman being raped and you don't do anything about it, you are in some small part responsible for allowing it to continue. Obviously, you're not engaging in the act. I mean, it's obviously not that bad or as bad, but you still have responsibility. If you see someone being accosted, almost everybody has a cell phone. You pick up the phone, call 911. Or you could quickly round up a number of people and run over and stop the activity from happening by a bunch of people showing up and scaring the perpetrator all off. Anything, you know, there's lots of ways to deal with that kind of situation. But the point is that if you stand around and do nothing and you just watch and you know something bad is going to happen and you do nothing to stop it, and I guess probably a better analogy, if you know that this guy is going to go rape this woman and you do nothing to stop the guy from raping the woman, if you know before the action's taking place and you do nothing, then you're complicit with the act. By doing nothing, you are implying consent, that you agree with what's about to happen. You're giving implicit consent for it to occur because you fail to act to stop it. And that's what Republicans are doing now. And I know there are a handful of Republicans and a few Democrats that have tried to put the brakes on Obamacare. But unfortunately, our politicians, at least the ones controlled by the big party on both sides, are unwilling to budge. They're going to put this thing in as is, and there will be no changes. There will be no fixes. There will be nothing to make this less of a disaster than it's going to be. And there won't be anything to make it stop. And that seems to be the agreement between the establishment Republicans and establishment Democrats. They're going to let the broken, known, flawed setup be implemented. That seems to be the implicit agreement. Democrats aren't going to patch it up or try to patch it up, because that would be an admission that it wasn't right to begin with. Republicans aren't going to try to stop it by defunding it, because they want it to fail and be able to blame it on the Democrats. Well, great. Blame it on Democrats. Short-term political win? Maybe. But a long-term mess? Absolutely. A terrible idea. So, let me talk real quick here before the break. We have about 9 minutes before the break. So before the break, I wanted to just hit a few stories, miscellaneous things that are out there. We talked about marijuana last week. Just saw a quick story from Friday this week about baby boomers are starting to use marijuana again. And many of these were people that probably used it originally when they were teenagers, but now that they're older and retired or close to retirement, they're using again. And so this story is written from the perspective of how terrible that is and whatever. Not that I encourage the use, but I've seen people use marijuana. Stupid, yes, but they're not really dangerous to anybody unless they get behind the wheel. Nobody in that scenario was doing that. Let's see here. What I think is interesting are the numbers involved in this. So there's about 24 million Americans who are current drug users. And I assume that's illicit drug user because that's what they talk about throughout the article. It's illicit drugs, illegal drugs, or drug abusers, I should say, because we'll get to that in a moment. So that's 24 million Americans. That's a lot. You know, 24 million, there's what, 330 million people in the U.S., and 24 million of them, that's over 7% of the public. 7%. Oh, yeah, but it says here, too. And that's a line. So 7.2% of the people between 50 and 60 years old, or 50 and 64 years old, are reporting that they use some sort of illicit drug, and the majority are marijuana users. 10% of children, teenagers report using it, which that's a little bit strange. I don't know what children is. And then they don't know either in the story. They'd use quotes around children and teenagers, whatever that is. And the most popular drug, so we have, what, 24 million Americans using drugs, it says. 19 of the 24 million are people who just use marijuana. So you figure that, what is that, 19 divided by 24, I don't even know, I had to put it in here. But that's looks like it's about 80%, a little less than 80%. So, I mean, where we're at now, and when we talked about this all last week, 80% of illegal drug use, quote unquote, is marijuana driven. Well, if you take that off the table, would we be able to drastically slash the budgets of these law enforcement agencies? And make no mistake, the law enforcement agencies are very much against decriminalizing marijuana, not for any other reason other than it's going to cut into their grant money. I mean, a lot of these agencies use their war on drugs money to fund a number of things. I just found this interesting, some of the numbers and the math and all that kind of stuff. But I had seen some of this before. Essentially, it's the people that are 80-plus years old. They're the most vehemently against marijuana and are for the war on drugs. And it just basically scales down from there. The younger you get, the less opposed you are to marijuana and the more opposed you are to a continued war on drugs. And I think that's going to change, you know, the next 10 years or so. We're going to see a lot more states start to do what California and Washington State are doing. And, in fact, Jimmy Comer, I think we talked about that last week, has said that he wants to start using hemp or issuing hemp licenses by the end of the year, given the ruling from the feds. So, good for them. I hope that, you know, hemp would be good for our state, and I hope that it they follow through with that. One of the things I wanted to get to for the last show or two and haven't had a chance. In Colorado, there are a few counties in the rural portions of the state that are trying to break away from Colorado. They are very upset with what's going on in Boulder, which is the capital. I'm sorry, Denver. Haha, don't mind me. Denver, the capital of Colorado, is the state house has been taken over by urban areas and that kind of stuff. And so there's a lot of people very upset that live in the rural areas. You know, having lived in a rural area almost my entire life, it's a different mindset, rural to urban. And so the rural areas are very upset. They don't like a lot of what's coming down the pipeline. And basically, they're looking to either form a 51st state, easy for me to say, or they want to break off and move to another state. And I want to say it was Wyoming they were looking to move into, but I can't remember offhand. And this story doesn't seem to... Oh, yeah, it is Wyoming. Yeah, so Wyoming is where they wanted to go. If we're not allowed to become a 51st state, they wanted to move over there. So anyway... I thought that was very interesting. The counties took a vote. The people support breaking off. And at this point, there's a lot of, obviously, people are upset. And when you take a vote and the vote comes out to secede from your state, that obviously makes some news and makes some noise. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. If you're not being listened to by your government, if your government is ignoring your needs, then it is the duty of the people to abolish that government and form one that is meeting their needs. And, you know, that was one of our founding principles. It's why we broke away from Great Britain, because the British government was not looking out for the welfare of the colonists. So, I find this very interesting. I think it's going to be very interesting to watch how this turns out. I don't think Congress would approve a 51st state. I don't see that. However, what I do see is the possibility that they would lobby Congress to redraw the lines and to have those counties that are adjacent to Wyoming be drawn into Wyoming. I think that is probably the most likely outcome. I just don't see, because of the way the Senate is built and what that would do, I don't see Congress approving splitting Colorado. I absolutely support their right to do that, and I wish Congress would too. I just don't, from a pragmatic standpoint, see that Congress is going to allow that to happen. Congress is not going to allow there to be two additional senators, especially from an area that's extraordinarily conservative in general. It's just, they're not going to allow it to happen. So, and that's just what it is. But it certainly sent the message, didn't it? I'm going to get a large glass of water and a break. I apologize. I still am very thirsty, very dehydrated. But it sent a message loud and clear to the State House. We're so angry, we're ready to leave. That's pretty strong. So I find that very interesting. I'm going to continue to try to watch that. But we're at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we're going to talk about Syria. We'll probably talk a little bit more about what happened at the booth this weekend. And, of course, your calls. The number here is area code 858-683-1326. And we'll be right back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled. I definitely need a drink of water. Liberty Unbridled on the Money Matters Radio Network. Back in just a moment.
So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
All right, folks, and we're back. You are listening to Liberty Unbridled, the My View Matters radio network. It is Sunday night, and we are here live every Sunday night. If you're joining us live, thank you. If you catch us on the podcast, thank you for that, too. We obviously enjoy having you listen live because then you can call in. And, in fact, we do have somebody in the queue right now that wants to talk. And, Tim, you are on the air.
Yeah, hi. Tim Nolan, Campbell County. I'm former judge, retired lawyer. Just wanted to follow up on the cost to the taxpayer of this war on drugs. You mentioned how much it's costing to fund these police agencies. I wanted to follow up on the cost of keeping people incarcerated and trying to keep themselves away from using drugs. I don't know the current cost. I would suspect it's $40,000-$50,000 a year to keep somebody in prison nowadays, and I know we incarcerate more people than any other industrialized society. And I'd venture to say that probably half the people in prison are there because of drugs. Not only that, when we put these people in prison, it keeps them, the families ostracized. And when they get back out, obviously they can't get a job. Our whole underground economy is pretty much based on drug trafficking. And, you know, I've seen it firsthand. I just don't know when we're going to wake up.
Well, and I thank you for that. I mean, one of the things that concerns me, Tim, is it seems to me that if 80% of the people using drugs are using marijuana. Now, you know, Tim, I'm sure you've seen somebody under the influence of marijuana before. You know, I have. And while I've never used it personally, you know, the only thing in danger from a person on, you know, using marijuana is the guy that's, you know, keeping the Twinkies away from the guy on pot. You know, I mean, the point being that most of the people using marijuana are not violent people. They tend not to be made violent. And really the only danger there is if they get behind the wheel intoxicated. I mean, obviously, that's never a good idea. But, I mean, just from a purely pragmatic standpoint, and this is what I'm getting at, if 80% are marijuana, and actually the same story says that the next biggest category is the prescription pills now, right? That's the damn Percocets and all that stuff that people accidentally get hooked on. I mean, it seems like, you know, between marijuana and the pills, you get rid of both of those categories, and you got a very small problem. It's not the big problem we have that we create.
Even with any other drugs, I mean, it's not something that you can legislate away. I mean, people are going to have problems, and many countries deal with it by making whatever they want available, so that they don't have to steal and prostitute, et cetera. That those small people that might still be, you know, hooked on some kind of a harder drug, you know, can get it from the state, and it's a whole lot cheaper than putting them in prison. But it would wipe out the entire underground economy, and if the people that were engaged in and you know the sale of drugs would get some kind of gainful employment, can you imagine the tax base that we'd create? It's just crazy. I mean, we tried prohibition of alcohol, and you know it's worse now with drugs. I mean, you're never
right.
It's never going to stop. The people that want to get it, and we pay for it. I mean, we're paying so much to try to keep these people from themselves. It's ridiculous.
And I think you've hit the nail on the head. The people that want to get it will get it, no matter what. Even in countries where they chop off your hand or do something absolutely insane, people still do the stuff. And, you know, there's just a certain percentage of people that crave that stuff, right? By the other side of the spectrum, even if it were legal today, you know, if heroin and coke and all that stuff were illegal today, I wouldn't be running out to buy it. I mean, it's not like it's illegal, I'm not buying it.
Right. And you know, none of that stuff was illegal until the Pure Food and Drug Act in 1936. And of course,
right. That's
when Coca-Cola had cocaine in it. My grandfather on my mother's side was a bare knuckles boxer. He would, according to the family lore, inject his knuckles with cocaine because you know, you're constantly breaking your knuckles. You know, when you're fighting that way. I don't think he ever became a cocaine addict, he probably didn't. I guess it helped him in the fight, you know. But you know, things weren't regulated back in those days.
Well, apparently, cocaine does work as an anesthetic. I know when I was in my car accident several years ago, and they had to stitch me up. That whatever the stuff they injected into me was TAC, and I don't remember all the stuff that the T and the A stood for, but C was cocaine. That's what I remember. And obviously, you know, that was
I just mean the
use.
Cost to society to keep these people in prison. I mean, I'd like to know. I mean, I have no idea, but I mean, particularly in the black community, I mean, we have completely torn, you know, the black community apart by incarcerating these people and turned places like Detroit into nothing but, you know, drug pushing centers it's just crazy. I mean, and the sad thing is that the liberals seem to be pushing, you know, this police agenda more than the conservatives.
And it is interesting, and you do bring up a good point there. It used to be, you know, and I'm sure, you know, in the 70s, you know, it was kind of the left that was all pushing against the prohibitions and the right that was pushing for them. And somewhere along the way, things blurred, and there's a lot of people on the left and a lot of people on the right who push for prohibition now. And, you know, as you mentioned, it's just as effective as it always is. Prohibition never works. It creates other side crime because you're creating black markets, and it creates more problems than it solves. And one of the really cool things that's come out here recently, Portugal decriminalized I want to say it was 2001 or 2002. I know there's over 10 years of data now. And by decrimming, what they went and did was that possession, not a crime. If you got a problem, you can now walk into a hospital and say, hey, I got a problem, right? What they've done by doing that is it's decreased the incidence of diseases spread by drug users such as HIV and those type of things, right? Because now they can go get clean needles without fear. It's increased the number of people actually seeking treatment. It's decreased the number of people dying from ODs and whatnot. And it's actually increased the number of people who, after getting treatment, become productive members of society again. Because
hasn't that been the model from like the Netherlands and those? Hasn't some countries like the Netherlands and several other European countries, Scandinavian countries, haven't they done that for years?
Sort of, but not. Apparently, Portugal is pretty extensive, and there's a lot of really good data, and especially because Portugal previously had a setup like us, right, where they were doing the hardcore crackdown, war on drugs style enforcement. And then the switch provides a very good baseline. And of course, you know, different societies, different countries, things aren't going to be exactly the same, but it provides a nice baseline of, hey, if we did this here, what would we expect to see? And what we saw, oh, and also there was a reduction in the number of addicts too. So that was, you know, there's all these benefits. Oh, and it also costs less money because we're not incarcerating them. So we're saving money, we're saving lives, we're doing all this good stuff. But now what we've got, and this is the craziest thing, we've got an entrenched police state that relies on that grant money. Colorado and Washington State, when Obama said he wasn't going to go after them, National Association of Sheriffs sent this nasty letter talking about how this was devastating, and that it meant that, you know, they weren't going to be able to fight the war on drugs. And you know, a lot of it's all fear-mongering, too. But
correct me if I'm wrong. Historically, didn't the war on drugs start with Nixon trying to come up with a way to get reelected?
Yeah, it was in 1971. And it was absolutely part of kind of a reelection effort. You know, Nixon was under a lot of heat because of the he had promised to get us out of Vietnam, and we weren't still out of Vietnam yet. So Nixon definitely started up the war on drugs. And previous to that, you mentioned the Food and Drug Act. I think it was Food Something Cosmetic Act. I can't remember now. It's been too long. But that act was where they started doing the bans. Prior to that, you know, you can go back and look at old Sears catalogs. They sold morphine in the Sears catalog as a cure for alcoholism.
Sure.
You could buy cocaine, pure cocaine, at a pharmacist. You know, there were legitimate medicinal uses. And the problem is, yeah, you know, there's always going to be people that abuse things, no matter what. I mean, it doesn't matter. If there's an inch of freedom in something, somebody's going to try to stretch it a mile and abuse it. But you can't penalize all of society for 1 or 2% of society's people that abuse their freedoms. It's not fair, and it's not right, and it costs way too much. Go ahead.
Maybe in a future show, maybe you could come up with with our incarceration costs directly related to the war on crime. I'd really be interested in that, both at the state and federal levels.
Yeah, a good friend of mine, Daniel Williams, he's been on the show. It is staggering. I know that enforcement, that doesn't count the incarceration. Enforcement is topping $200 billion a year now. And that's just federal enforcement, which is insane. I mean, that's, I guess now that we're running a trillion
incarceration
deficit
has
annually,
it's
not so much.
Right. Incarceration way ahead of that.
Well, and then on top of that, you're also the things that are harder to calculate are the other costs, like opportunity cost. So we had a story one time of a guy who got busted with one pill that somebody had given him at a club one night, and he didn't even intend on taking it, but he had it, and he ended up losing his job and his career and everything, and he's flipping burgers at a fast food restaurant. This guy was going to be an engineer. I forget what company he was with, but it was one of the big, you know, computer companies. And he lost it all over one pill. And, you know, those are the kind of things that you're now taking productive people out of society because you have this crazy zero-tolerance policy. And zero-tolerance policies never work. But you take people that would have been productive, and how much did that cost, right? How much does it cost us in people who, after they get out of jail, end up on welfare because they can't get a job? How much does it cost us because of the war on drugs? A lot of the illegal immigration is fueled by the fact that people are escaping Mexico because Mexico is a hellhole because of the drug warlords that are empowered by our drug policy. I mean, there's all these things that you almost can't calculate how much it really costs because you get three layers deep.
It's a pyramiding scheme. The traffic cop will pull somebody over. They'll have a pill, and they'll say, oh, okay, well, you give us the names of three or four other people, and we'll go light on you. And so they'll call their friends and relatives. And, you know, I've just seen people get so caught up in that. And then sooner or later, you know, here you've got people that are just, you know, minor little dibs or dabs ending up in prison. And, you know, their kids end up in welfare. You know, it's bizarre.
Like I said, there's just so many costs, and it's just not worth it. The reality is, Tim, nobody in their lifetime wants to grow up to be a drug user. I mean, have you ever heard a five-year-old kid say, "I want to grow up to be a drug abuser. I want to grow up to be addicted to drugs"? Nobody dreams of doing that. It happens generally either by accident, which is a lot of what happens with those pain pills, or because there's some sort of psychological damage, or because they, you know, whatever, right? They want to party or be with the cool kids, whatever it is.
Experimentation.
Right? There's some mitigating. Well, experimentation typically one time is not going to cause a problem. It's the pattern of abuse that causes the issue. Certainly there's the one-time overdose, but my understanding is that the real problems come in with the long-term use and the addiction that comes
right.
with that. And that tends to suggest that there's a deeper problem. I mean, if you're using heroin every day or if you're using cocaine every day, there's something going on. Right. I mean, there's some something else in your life that's causing you to do that. And, you know, in Portugal, what they did was they shifted money out of the war on drugs, out of enforcement, and put it into mental health. And they've been able to help people get rehab and clean up their lives and solve the underlying problems. And that's the real crime of our system. Not only do we incarcerate the people, but we don't actually give them any help. We send them back out into society with even more problems than they came in with. They still have the old problems.
Problem is that the help we offer is profit motivated. You've got a lot of private companies. I mean, you could just use local areas as an example that are for profit companies that are working with the court system to be supposed counselors, et cetera, and all they're really interested in is having things people come off and drop $50 a week. I mean, you know, they're really not getting any help.
Yeah, I would like to hope that if that was really pervasive, and maybe it is, maybe I'm just naive on it. You know, honestly, I'm not as in tune with that part of it. I would hope that some nonprofit would start up, you know, and would try to compete with those folks as a nonprofit because, you know, quite honestly, that should be the goal of any of our policies, should be if people want to get help, there should be a mechanism for them to get help. I would prefer to see it through private charity or through a nonprofit or something like that. That's what I'd like to see. But at the end of the day, incarceration should be the last resort, and it's the exact opposite. Today we incarcerate first, and then maybe you get some rehab. You go the inverse route.
Well,
we should try to help people first before we ruin their lives.
Forcing somebody to get counseling, you know, forcing counseling is just ridiculous. Put somebody on probation and saying, okay, you go get counseling and pay them $50 a week. I mean, you know, if somebody doesn't ask for help or want help, you can't, you know, you can take the horse to water, you can't make them drink. I mean, and that's pretty much what's going on today. I mean, and, you know, if these people don't want to stop, I mean, you know, who really cares? I mean, there's a lot of conduct that you can't stop people from engaging in. You know, I mean,
right.
We can't run other people's lives. I don't know, you know, what it's going to take for us to learn that, you know, but that's pretty much where we are,
road,
I think.
As long as they're not behind the wheel, as long as they're not putting somebody else's life in immediate danger, then there's nothing that society even really has to say about that. Because, and you're getting to a broader philosophical point, at the end of the day, what you do to yourself is your business, and I have no right to tell you how to live your life. And likewise, no one else has the right to tell me how to live mine. I own me, you own you.
But there are
leave
a lot
each
of people
alone.
Crying.
Oh,
there's
I
lots
know.
Of people crying.
Man, we like to talk about the nannies on here all the time. There's always nannies, and they're always trying to legislate your life for you so that you can't make the decisions that they disapprove of. And it's unfortunate, but that is what we deal with and what we fight. So, well, Tim, do you have anything
else?
Well,
it's great talking to you. Love the show. Keep up the good work.
Thank you very much. Hey, thank you, and you have a good one. Bye. All right, folks. So thanks, Tim, for calling in. Folks, we need to buzz through this. I wanted to hit some of the serious stuff because this is a big issue right now. And, again, The polls are showing that the moderates are where the entrenched powers are starting to get traction with supporting going in and doing stuff in Syria, that the far left and the far right, whatever, you know, air quotes around those, are still solidly against going into Syria. And it's only the moderates that are, in theory, starting to give and starting to say, well, maybe we should. And I think this is important. So, first of all, it's important to note that in the presidential election cycle last year in 2012, one of the things that Joe Biden said was that if America elected Mitt Romney, that Mitt Romney would take America to war with Syria. That's kind of funny and ironic considering what is happening now, that Obama is trying to take us to war with Syria. The UN is working on getting into investigate potential chemical weapons use. And the UN is trying to look at some of the incidents, the more recent ones. The U.S. is basically saying it's too late, that we're not going to let the UN do their job, even though technically the UN's job is to enforce the chemical weapons ban. We're not going to let them do that. Funny story on BuzzFeed, and BuzzFeed just got a bunch of different miscellaneous stuff on it. Some of it's funny, some of it's irreverent, whatever. This story is the 14 principled anti-war celebrities we fear may have been kidnapped. And, of course, these are all the celebrities that were very, very outspoken against Bush and against Iraq, and specifically Iraq, not really Afghanistan, but Iraq. And you have people like Sheryl Crow and Bruce Springsteen and Martin Sheen, Ed Asner, Sean Penn, Tim Robbins, George Clooney, Jackson Brown, Janine Garofalo, Neil Young, Jessica Lange, Barbara Streisand, Danny Glover, and Susan Sarandon. Nobody's really, none of the celebs are speaking out against this proposed action to take in Syria. And, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, be principled or not, it doesn't matter who's in the White House. War is still war. And if you're for it, you're for it. And if you're against it, you should be against it. And there should be criteria. And quite honestly, the criteria for Syria sound almost identical to the criteria that were given for us to go into Iraq. So if you are against Iraq, you should be against Syria. It's the same thing. Now, Alan Grayson is a Democrat, and we've talked about him a couple times on the show before. Alan Grayson is very outspoken, and for those of you who are friends with Lean a Bit Right, you may have seen him. He was the guy that was busting on Dick Cheney on the floor of the House, and he had these charts, and I can't remember the whole speech anymore, but everybody was labeling him as a nutbag. He lost that following election, and after redistricting, he's back. And so Alan Grayson is predicting that the House will not vote to go into Syria. And he's giving it 100-to-1 odds against the resolution. So basically he believes that it will fail in the House, and decisively so. And in fact, even Dianne Feinstein, in this article, Dianne Feinstein says that she was hearing overwhelmingly from her constituency that they did not want a U.S. strike in Syria. And now she's saying, but, you know, we have the classified material, and so we know better. Oh, hate that. Anyway, the point is, the American public is very much against this still. And we need to remain resolved together against this. Don't let the media sway your opinion. If you're one of the moderates, the people in the middle, even libertarians or you know, moderate libertarians, don't be swayed. Humanitarian wars are not humanitarian. It's an oxymoron. There is no such thing as a humanitarian war. War is death and destruction. That's what war is. There is nothing humanitarian about death and destruction. It's a civil war with bad guys against bad guys. There's no reason to go in. And the U.S. House is listening. And that's good, because that is what they're supposed to do. They are supposed to be the voice of the people. I'm hopeful. We've got about a minute and a half left here, so I'm going to wrap it up. I'm hopeful because I think a lot of people are really coming around now. And I've got a bunch of stuff on the recession, and I still haven't been able to get to. I've had that on queue for 3 or 4 weeks, and we'll get to that. But as much as I don't like us being in a prolonged recession, as much as I don't like that it's in part the actions of our legislators that have prolonged our recession that we're in, the upside of it, the silver lining, if you will, is that more people are politically aware and politically awake than I think of any time in history. Well, at least recent history for sure. Maybe in my lifetime. Maybe close to my lifetime. I know in the late 70s, there was a high level of dissatisfaction for the exact same reasons. Prolonged recession, escalating prices, inflation. We're in the same boat. The point is we have to remain vigilant. We can't become complacent. We have to keep pushing. We have to get more people to realize what's going on. While they're willing to listen, we need to get people on our side. Folks, that's the show. I thank you for tuning in. Tim, thanks for calling in. Thanks to those of you that just called in to listen and were listening online. See you next week. This is another edition of Liberty on Bridle on the My View Matters Radio Network. Have a good week.